This podcast is brought to you by Perfect Smiles in Nashua, New Hampshire. Do what I did and update your smile. Call 844-A-PERFECT-SMILE. When you change your smile, you change your life.
Better strap yourself in. It's time for the Howie Carr Show.
Let's just say there's a vaccine that is approved and even distributed before the election. Would you get it?
Well, I think that's going to be an issue for all of us. I will say that I would not trust Donald Trump.
Vaccinations cause autism, paralysis, and even death.
Live from the Matthews Brothers Studios.
Another night of violent protests in the United States, this time in Rochester, New York, after the release of body cam video showing the arrest of Daniel Prude, a black man who was pinned to the ground by police and later died.
They can right off, America! The police! Rochester Police Department!
We will fully engage with the Race Commission and our real rapid response team to further improve our response to mental health crises and re-envision our police department.
You have reached the 911 police emergency line. Due to defunding of the police department, no one is here to take your call.
Who's your captain? Howie Carr.
The federal government, there's a constitutional issue whether the federal government could issue such a mandate. I don't think constitutionally they could, so I wouldn't issue a mandate.
Have a national mandate to wear a mask. Not as a burden, but as a patriotic duty to protect one another.
Yeah? How's that working out for you?
Unchained and unstoppable.
If you're a white player in these locker rooms, I think it's incumbent upon you to really help with the change.
We gotta, like, lock arm in arm and be together in a football locker room. This is not okay.
Rump swabs, hacks, and moon bats beware. It's Howie Carr.
Hello, everyone. It is not Howie Carr. It is Grace Curley. I'm filling in for Howie Carr today for the first 2 hours of the show, and then Taylor Cormier is going to take over. But we're here. It's live. Happy Labor Day. We are going to give you an awesome show because, honestly, I've been in this business now for about 6 years. I don't remember a Labor Day with this much news.
We always celebrate Labor Day in the best way, by laboring.
By working. Very rare, but it happens. It happens in radio. Taylor, so much to unpack in that introduction. I personally, the thing that jumps out at me the most is the vaccinations. Because now Kamala Harris, who is Joe Biden's pick for vice president, if he should win, is saying that if a vaccine comes out, she would be skeptical because Trump is the president.
Why? It's not like Trump was in a lab all by himself, pouring things into little beakers going, no, just about right. I think I got it now. It's ready, everybody.
It's beautiful.
The greatest vaccine. I made it. Everybody will tell you.
But Taylor, this is what they do. This is Trump derangement. So first, coronavirus happened. And you remember, this goes a while back now, but it was supposed to be 15 days originally. It was 2 weeks to flatten the curve. So we did the 2 weeks, and as far as I could tell, even people who are skeptical tried their best. Even Trump supporters said, you know what, if it's 2 weeks, we'll put on our masks, we'll do it. We'll sit inside for 2 weeks, watch them curb your enthusiasm, and we'll get through it. Then the 2 weeks passed, and the flatten the curve went out the window. And then what it became was, we need to shut down everything. We need to shut down everything, and until we find a cure. Then it became about the cure. Until there's a vaccine. You've heard Charlie Baker say it. You've heard Anthony Fauci say it, Dr. Fauci. Until there's a vaccine, this is not going to end. Phase four is never going to happen. Now, in true Trump derangement fashion, they're saying when there's a vaccine, it's not going to happen. We're not going to take the vaccine if Trump's president. It's mind-boggling. It's really amazing. And what it is it's so transparent to people that this all stems from Trump being president. And that's what I heard the most this weekend. I was talking to people, mostly Trump supporters, but I did talk to a few people in the center, a few people on the left, and the overwhelming theme I heard was that people are seeing through what the Democrats are doing. And not just with the coronavirus, but obviously the story that really took over last week on Friday was the story from The Atlantic, which, Taylor, I don't know, you're the Trump expert here with The Voice. What did they say he called veterans?
Suckers and losers. All of them. The cemeteries are filled with suckers and losers.
It's ridiculous. We were talking about this today in the office. It would be absurd for anyone to say it, but it's especially absurd for a guy who stands up at a naval graduation and shakes all the graduates' hands for 4 hours. It just doesn't add up. Their caricature of Trump that these liberals have created doesn't fit with the real life Trump. But everyone I talked to this weekend said they weren't as mad about the story in The Atlantic and how ridiculous it is. They were more mad at how stupid Democrats think we are, that they can do this right after Salongate, right after Nancy Pelosi's horrible PR week where she got caught going into a salon in San Francisco. She wasn't supposed to. She didn't have a mask on. And then right after, bam, this story breaks. Anonymous sources say. And the biggest part of this thing that really contradicts the story is the John Bolton aspect. Because here's
what's that about?
I'm going to explain, Nancy. Okay, I'm going to explain. Don't get your hair curlers too tight. Everything's going to be okay. Here's the thing. Part of the ceremony that they're saying Trump skipped when he was in France, I believe, is because they said that he was worried the rain was going to dishevel his hair and that he didn't want to go see suckers and losers in the cemetery. I'm obviously summarizing it. I didn't have time to actually go in here and read the ridiculousness that is this story. I gave up on The Atlantic a long time ago. But the problem is that there's an email that confirms that they did, in fact, not go because of the weather. But that, for me, isn't the biggest part of this. The biggest part of this is that John Bolton has never heard him say it. And John Bolton was there. How do we know he was there? John Bolton wrote a book, a Never Trumper, I Hate Orange Man Bad book, where he talked about this exact day. So you're telling me that if John Bolton had the chance to add this into his book and maybe sell a few hundred more copies, he wouldn't have done it? It just, once again, nothing adds up. And it's all so obvious. And then right after it came out, there came the ads, Joe Biden's for veterans, the sad ads of veterans saying, I'm not a loser, I'm not a sucker. As if Trump actually ever said that. Now they're asking Biden to deny or Biden to explain how he feels about what Trump might have said. This is the level. This is the bar we've set. But something Taylor said earlier today struck out at me because I saw it also on Twitter, which was this may have been something that they weren't planning on rolling out as quickly as they did. Because a lot of people think they got panicky. It was a bad week for them. Joe Biden was doing a lot of press conferences. He was whispering a lot in his mask to the audience. Things were not looking good. Nancy Pelosi was, like I said, at the hair salon. Joy Reid had a very, very offensive comment towards Muslims. Some people were calling her.
He hasn't. Not at all.
This hasn't been a good week for Joe Biden. Not at all.
Not at all.
It was a tough week. So a lot of people think that, coupled with some polls, which we will get to throughout the course of the show, made the Democrats bring this out, roll this out a little bit earlier.
This traditionally would have been the October surprise.
But now it's the Labor Day surprise, the Friday before Labor Day surprise. And it makes sense why they had to roll it out sooner. When you have a candidate who's not leaving the basement, you know, sometimes you got to pull out the big guns when he's, and then he does leave the basement and it's bad. It was not good last week. And a lot of people don't watch the full thing like you do, Taylor, like I do, like Jared does. But if you watch the full thing, you understand why they brought this out a little earlier. They needed something. They're getting desperate. And this is what they did. We're going to talk about it all in this first hour. We're also going to talk about the story out of Northeastern, which is going to become a huge national story. Some kids there are being, I guess they're tossed out. I don't know if you want to call it suspended, because they can technically come back because they had a tiny little gathering, but an unsupervised gathering nonetheless. So
how dare you?
They're not getting their tuition back. It's a whole big deal. We're also going to talk to Dave Seminara at 3:30. Howie is enjoying his Labor Day. He took the day off. Well-deserved. He's doing some client stops in the Cape, saying hi to some of our favorite clients, including Todd from Moby Dick's. I saw Todd this weekend at Moby Dick's. Fabulous restaurant. Everybody should check it out. But I'm sure Howie's listening, and I hope you all are enjoying the show. We're going to have tons of news. Call in 844-500-4242. We'll be talking about all this stuff. We'll also be talking to Joe DeGeneva. I know you guys have a lot of questions for Joe, and I know the number one question is, when is this stuff going to drop? When are we getting indictments? Is Durham going to bring this out in time, or is it going to be too late? And we're going to ask him all of those questions. Don't go anywhere. Taylor Cormier is on the board. I'm filling in the hot seat for the wonderful Howie Carr. This is the Howie Carr Show.
Don't touch that dial. Howie Carr will be back after this.
This is Mark in Williston, Vermont.
This is Marie in Somerville, Massachusetts.
This is Mike from South Attleboro, Mass. And this is the Howie Carr Show.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Howie Carr Show. I'm Grace Curley. I'm filling in for the legendary Howie Carr. I know he's listening. I know he hates being called a legend. So that's why I thought I'd throw it out there. This segment, this poll question, is brought to you by the 2020 Subaru Forester. Ready for long drives beneath the sun. SubaruofNewEngland.com. Visit SubaruofNewEngland.com. Taylor Cormier is on the board. Taylor, what's the poll question, and what are the results thus far?
Are you going to watch any pro football games this season?
I don't know. I love Tom Brady so much.
Oh, well, he's not with the Patriots anymore, Grace.
I know.
I don't know if you caught that bit of news.
But I think I'll still watch him for Tampa Bay, and I love Bill Belichick, so I'll probably watch the Patriots and Cam Newton. But then a part of me doesn't want to support it because it's just, oh, they're all social justice warriors at this point.
78% say they will not be watching.
Wow. What about you, Taylor?
I will not be watching. And my wife says she'll watch. I said, not in this house.
Wow.
This household will not give them the ratings.
Oh, my gosh. Mrs. Cormier is going to have to be watching the football season
She's
in the driveway.
She's going to have to bounce over to her parents' house and watch it. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Well, guys, the story that everyone's talking about, we actually just got a text from 617 saying, are you covering the Northeastern story? We are indeed. So this story broke this weekend. Northeastern University has dismissed 11 students after they were found violating the school's public health protocols. The students were part of the NUIN program. So I actually have a friend who did this program. How it works is traditionally students study abroad their junior year. At Northeastern, you can study abroad your freshman year, the first term, and that way they can take in more kids even though they don't have the campus housing available. So usually kids don't really want to study abroad their freshman year because you want to kind of get acclimated with the school. But if you really want to go to Northeastern, you say, okay, I'll study abroad for the first semester and then come and live on campus with everyone else when I get back. So these kids obviously are not studying abroad due to the pandemic. So they were staying, over 800 students are staying in two-person rooms at a Westin hotel less than 1 mile from the school's main campus in Boston. The 11 students were found together in a room at the Westin on Wednesday night. The students and their parents were told Friday they must vacate the hotel within 24 hours. This story is from CNN, by the way. And they are required to undergo COVID-19 testing at Northeastern.
This is so incredibly significant.
This is the part that is getting people all riled up. The students will not receive refunds on any payments made for the fall semester. Northeastern and its community of students, faculty, and staff take violations of health and safety protocols very seriously, said the senior vice chancellor for student affairs. How he loves all those titles. These higher education, they have lots of fancy titles and lots of people in charge. So they're not giving the students back their tuition, which I believe is upwards of 30,000. I can get the exact number. But people are upset. People feel as though these kids should not be punished to this extent. My question is, it says 11 students, and I'm just confused if there was only 11 students socializing or if it was the 11 students plus other people. Because 11 to me feels like it's kind of underneath the requirement. Like you could have 11 people together.
Yeah, I'm very confused as to why this is happening. Is Northeastern going to go through all the social media profiles of all of their students and see if they gathered in groups of 11 or more people, not necessarily students, just to take away their tuition and take away their studentship?
Well, the other thing, too, is that, and I want to hear what people think about this, because if I were a parent right now with a child going into their freshman year, I think I'd honestly tell them to take a gap year, which a lot of kids are doing. So next year, there's going to be an inundation of kids going to these schools because they're all taking a year off. But I just don't know if I would trust these big colleges and universities with that much money right now. I don't trust them. I think they take it and then they send your kids home and tell them to go on their Zoom calls and get their entire education off of Zoom. I just don't think I would trust them. And I think that this is ripe. The school is ripe for a lawsuit in this case. The parents are for sure going to sue. And they'll probably win because it's ridiculous. We've got Johnny on the line to talk about this story. Johnny, what do you think?
Yeah, Grace, my daughter is going into her freshman year, and she's going to Tufts. Now, nice. I've been following this because, of course, Curtatone and the other, you know, they're trying to shut down the student housing, and it's bad enough with all this. I don't buy into this whole hype of the corona stuff, whatever. The COVID. But my daughter, I keep on getting emails from Tufts, and they're pushing this whole social justice awareness and all this crap. And it's like, I don't say anything because my daughter's going to be, Tufts is a great school. But I just hope they put a kibosh on this whole nut gibberish. I hate the propaganda they're throwing at these kids. I mean, I served in Iraq and Afghanistan. I don't need to tell anyone, have someone tell me I'm racist, I'm sexist, I'm
right.
Shut up.
Right. Johnny, thank you for your service and thank you for the call. I totally agree. And I think another element of this is that people are fed up. People want their kids. Howie always says this. People want their kids out of the house. And furthermore, just thinking of these kids who are now freshmen, their senior years of high school were ruined because of this pandemic. Now their freshman year of college is basically ruined. And guaranteed, this pandemic has had effects on everyone. Other people have had much worse happen to them. But I do feel for these kids. Like now they're in a hotel room with 11 people and they're going to be kicked out of school and their parents just lost upwards of 30 grand. It's ridiculous. And I just don't understand how these schools think they're going to get away with it.
I still don't understand the, you know, maybe when testing rates were at 5% or whatever, 5% positive, all right, there was some cause for some precautions, but we're below 1% now. And that's according to Charlie Parker. We're below 1% positive test rates for the state of Massachusetts. Can we drop this, please? Can we drop all of it?
Can we drop this facade? And also, we should be doing what should have happened since the start, which is protect the vulnerable. If you're old and if you're nervous, don't go to the Westin. Don't leave your house. Don't go to restaurants. No one is forcing anyone to travel or to go out to eat. But these young kids at Northeastern shouldn't be punished for trying to live when they know they're going to live. It's ridiculous, guys. We'll have more on this and Dave Seminara when we get back. I'm Grace Curley. This is the Howie Carr Show.
Have you had enough yet of the volatility of the stock markets? Down 1,000 or more points one day, up the next. Are you tired of watching that little box at the bottom of your TV screen that shows the market plunging hundreds of points? You need to get diversified with Orion Metal Exchange. You shouldn't be caught flat-footed in this roller coaster ride the stock markets have been on. No matter what the reason, the coronavirus or before that, the oil price war abroad, you always need to be diversified. And that means owning some precious metals, gold and silver. Listen up. Orion Metal Exchange is the only precious metals company that I trust. If you still haven't taken advantage of their no obligation guide, it's not too late. Give them a call today to learn more about gold and silver. Call Orion today at 1-800-912-2300. That's 1-800-912-2300. Call them now, 1-800-912-2300.
Live from the Matthews Brothers Studios.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back and happy Labor Day. I'm Grace Curley. I'm filling in for Howie Carr. He's taking the day off. Well-deserved. He's the hardest-working man in radio. And he's enjoying a beautiful day at Wauquasset in Harwich. And he's traveling all throughout the Cape. So keep your eye out for him. You might see him. He's probably wearing shorts. He's probably a big smile on his face. Probably eating some fried clams. Keep an eye out. But we have big news to get to today, and I'm so excited that we have Dave Seminara on. He's one of my favorite journalists. He does a fabulous job, writes very diverse pieces. He never really sticks to one thing, but he says lately he has an obsession with Naomi Osaka. She's the world's highest paid female athlete. She is ranked 10th in the world as far as tennis players are concerned. Dave, tell me why you're so interested in the story of Naomi Osaka right now.
Hey, Grace. Happy Labor Day, and thanks for having me back on for that intro. And for those Biden clips before, which were really cracking me up. So, yeah, Naomi Osaka, I've been a tennis player my whole life, and I love tennis. I'm obsessed with really many sports, but tennis is my favorite one. And I've actually been a fan of Naomi Osaka. I don't know if you guys remember, but she beat Serena Williams in the final of the U.S. Open a couple of years ago, and it was got a crazy amount of publicity because Serena claimed that the umpire, Carlos Ramos, was basically discriminating against her because she was a woman, and she pulled this whole, you know, women's rights thing. I'm out here fighting for women's rights, and Naomi Osaka was getting booed by the crowd even though she won the tournament because people were sympathizing with Serena. So that's kind of how she burst onto the scene, and I really started liking her because I felt sorry for her back then, and I thought she was a great player. But, you know, a couple of weeks ago, there was a warm-up tournament to the U.S. Open, and like many of these other athletes, she pulled out of the tournament and said she was boycotting. She wasn't going to play because she sent out a tweet about this, and she said that, I'm going to quote from her tweet. She said, "Watching the continued genocide of black people at the hands of the police is making me sick to my stomach." And she went on from there. And that post got 422,000 favorites. So, you know, calling what's going on with police around the country a genocide against black people, to me, that was one of the most, of all the crazy and weird and obscene things that we've heard athletes say in recent months, to me, this was the craziest. And I thought, genocide? There's going to be backlash to this. That's crazy. But instead, what have all these, you know, the sports media, she's become a sports media darling. And many of my favorite tennis legends whom I've, you know, grown up loving, like Chris Everett and John McEnroe, who are commentators for ESPN, they've just been heaping praise on her during this tournament, the U.S. Open. Oh, she's such a leader. She showed such courage. She stood up. She did this. She did that. And I've listened to all of this. Just, it makes, you know, it really, it's just, it's sickening. And she's continued on during the tournament. She wears a different mask for each onto the court. Each time she comes on the court for each match with the name of a different black victim of either police brutality or just racism, or people who were killed by, you know, black people who were killed by whites. And it's just the whole thing. It's just, it's been crazy. And she's got a new commercial out too, that's been playing during the tournament for some company that I've never heard of, but basically they show a number of different black athletes. And at the end of it, Osaka said, "If our humanity bothers you," or something along those lines, "get used to it." And it's like, really? If your humanity bothers us? I mean, why are you showing us a commercial assuming that we are racists who don't like black people? I mean, just the whole thing is really, it's turned my stomach. And I don't know. It's just all of a sudden her and some of these other athletes that I really have supported and rooted for over the years, all of a sudden they're making me sick.
And, right. They're making you sick to your stomach. But Dave, I just want to interrupt you for a quick second because what she wrote, and I'm going to quote it again here. We have Dave Seminara from the National Review. Watching the continued genocide of black people at the hands of police is honestly making me sick to my stomach. And you just talked about how that kind of exaggeration and hyperbole, it's obviously for dramatic effect, but it is very dangerous. But in your article, you also, you quote a lot of statistics that show that that's just not true. That's not what's really happening.
Sure. No, I mean, and that's true. I mean, if you look at people like, for example, Heather McDonald, who wrote a very good book called A War on Cops, The War on Cops, I should say. Read that book if you want to get some, you know, a really sort of a reality check of how prevalent, you know, police brutality is. But I think that what's happening is here is that I think a lot of conservatives, we have this attitude like, well, who cares what athletes say? They're dumb. Or who cares what famous actors say? Or who cares what various celebrities say? Well, you know what? I think we ignore all of this stuff at our own peril because there are a lot of very impressionable people out there who spend a lot of time on Twitter and social media, and they follow these celebrities, whether they be athletes or actors or whomever. And there's a lot of us who watch an awful lot of sports on TV, and we hear this stuff. And I mean, you know, the U.S. Open right now, a tennis tournament, and all these other things. I mean, it's like it's almost like Black Lives Matter have organized these tournaments. I mean, it's like the U.S. Open brought to you by Black Lives Matter, and all these other sports, the NBA, and this stuff is being crammed down everyone's throats. And I think we ignore all of it at our own peril, because people are very impressionable. And, you know, when I see a tweet like hers, which seems outrageous, but gets 400 and some odd thousand likes, it worries me a little.
And she's not just, it's not the kind of sport where if you bow out of a competition or if you decide to boycott, it doesn't affect the other players. It's a tournament. And as you point out, none of the other seven single players left in the tournament at the time of this announcement she made were Americans. So her social justice warrior stance here was just affecting a bunch of players who wanted to play tennis.
Correct. And who knows, you know, her opponent never really said that, you know, if she was scheduled to play that day. And what if, who knows? I mean, I don't know if Naomi Osaka, maybe she was, she later pulled out of the final. This was a semifinal match she didn't play in. She later pulled out of the final. She didn't play because of an injury. So how do we know that her social warriordom wasn't also mixed with a little bit of, hey, I'd like an extra day, because they did end up playing the match that she boycotted the following day. How do we know that she also didn't just want an extra day of rest?
I mean,
how is that fair to your opponent? There's, you know, there's a question of sportsmanship and gamesmanship involved there too. And just one, I'll point out, you mentioned that the other players weren't American. She is no longer American either, because she renounced her citizenship. Now, she was born in Japan, but has lived in the U.S. since she was, I believe, 2 years old, but she represents Japan, and she had to renounce her U.S. citizenship in order to play for the Japanese in the Olympics next year. So again, this is somebody who lives in the United States, has spent their whole life here, and like a lot of these other athletes with dual citizenship, chooses not to represent our country, but sure likes to attack it.
Right. No, exactly. Makes millions of dollars in this country and has a pretty nice life in this country, I would say. But Dave, I know you're more of a tennis guy, but I do want to ask you a little bit about the NFL. It is our poll question today.
Oh, yeah.
And I just want to get your take because, as you said, I believe they're writing Black Lives Matter in one of the end zones where they'll play the games. And do you think, this is what we're debating here, do you think people are just going to be angry and try to ignore it while they watch the games, or are people actually going to shut these games off?
You know, it's a really good question. I don't know if the ratings will suffer or not, because so many of us are so starved for sports. I'm still watching sports. I would love to say that I'm so principled that I'm turning everything off. I'm still watching sports, and I think a lot of others will too. And I think we can take heart that there will be a few people who are going to stand up for the national anthem. Already there's this guy on the Steelers. I don't know if I'm pronouncing his name correctly or not, but go ahead and Google Stephon Tuitt, T-U-I-T-T. And I think, believe his mother was an immigrant from the Caribbean, and he's already said, I am standing for the anthem because I'm proud to be American. And look what's, I'm paraphrasing him here, but he's saying, look, my mother came here from the Caribbean, and she's, you know, worked hard and has persevered and became a nurse and has been successful, and I love this country, and I'm not going to allow, you know, isolated incidents of, you know, police brutality to disrupt my love for the USA. So I think that we're gonna have to swallow a lot of Black Lives propaganda, but I'm hopeful that we're also going to have some people here and there who are going to stand up for our anthem and stand up for what they believe in. So I hope there's going to be some optimism there too. I'm praying for it.
I think another thing, Dave, is that Tyler, and just like you, I'm not a huge football fan as far as the names go. I don't know everybody's name. Tyler effort, I want to say, is going to honor David Dorn and put him on the helmet. And what's interesting here is they've kind of put the NFL in a box, because you can't say that players can wear the names of, let's say, Jacob Blake on their helmets, but they can't wear David Dorn's. Once you allow people to wear other people's names, you kind of have to let everybody do it. So like you said, it'll be interesting to see if some people who might be a little more right-leaning come out and say, listen, I'm going to stand for the anthem and I'm going to support the USA. And, you know, they can't really stop them from doing that. But Dave, I want to switch gears here very quickly. You brought up to me earlier today a book, and it's called, I guess they did an NPR interview on this. I can't even believe this book exists. It's called In Defense of Looting. Can you tell people a little bit about not just the book, but the interview on NPR? I guess the interviewer was also stunned that this book is not a satire, but tell people how this book came to light, who wrote it, and what the message is.
Well, it's pretty descriptive right there in the title. It is a defense of looting, if you can believe that. And what I, you know, a number of different things that I find shocking about this. First of all, that any publisher would, during a time like this, when our cities are, you know, under siege, under attack from arsonists and looters and all of this, that a publisher would decide to publish this thing is incredible. But apparently this woman, Vicky Osterweil, who's trans, by the way, also, I believe it's a woman who was a man. Apparently, she wrote an essay of the same name in defense of looting during the Ferguson riots several years ago. And now someone has decided, probably the publisher, I bet, approached her and said, hey, you know, you want to build up on that essay and, you know, publish a book on this and let's make a little cash during this time. And she did that. And, you know, that's astonishing in and of itself. But, you know, the fact that NPR gave a platform to this woman, I mean, go ahead and Google it, NPR interview in defense of looting. NPR gave this woman a platform and treated her seriously as though the idea of not just looting, but she also defends arson and rioting as well, too, as though these are things that, as though it's debatable. You know what I mean? And it isn't just NPR. I wish it was just NPR, too, but it's also a number of other publications have treated her seriously, including The New Yorker. There's a long interview with her in The New Yorker that you guys can find there on Google. And I think there's a bunch of other publications, too. And she got a couple good reviews, too. I noticed that Publishers Weekly actually gave her a good review, too. So,
but, Dave, do you notice there's a little trend here that I'm starting to catch on to? And it started with when rioters were tearing down statues and Trump said, who's next? Andrew Jackson, George Washington. And everyone said, no, that's crazy. And then a few weeks went by and all of a sudden people said, maybe George Washington, maybe we should take him down. Like, well, why does this guy have to be up there? So they start ripping down George Washington. He's bad all of a sudden. And then with looting, I noticed that it started off as, oh, that's an anecdote. Oh, that's not really happening. Oh, you know, it's peaceful protest. And now the narrative is shifting to, well, maybe looting's not that bad. Maybe stores need to be looted. And I'm going to read you a quote here. It says, the author told a credulous NPR interviewer that looting was justified because it, quote, strikes at the heart of property, of whiteness, and of the police, and also provides people with an imaginative sense of freedom and pleasure. She added, riots reveal how without police and without state oppression, we can have things for free, end quote.
And so the whole sense of right and wrong has evaporated on the far left. And we've also seen this in terms of people who are criminals who assault women. Well, it's okay. You know, it's okay if they happen to be an illegal alien or if they happen to be someone who, you know, whom the police have supposedly mistreated or whatever. If you're part of a favored group, you know, it's okay if you've assaulted women. It's just, where is the sense of right and wrong? I don't know. I mean, you know, there's also, if you look at the New Yorker's interview with this woman, Vicky Osterweil, she also wrote in her book, those who participate in rioting and looting tend to be the most politically informed and socially engaged in the neighborhood. She wrote.
Oh.
So the point there seems to be that you can loot if you're a Trump supporter, if you've got a MAGA hat on, you better not be looting. But hey, if you're voting, you know, if you're far left and you want to, you know, ransack the Apple store, get yourself a new MacBook Pro, as long as you've got the right politics, go ahead.
I'm glad you said that, Dave, because on the other side, I'm going to talk to people about a new Trump ad that's out about Biden supporters and looters. He puts them all in the same group. He thinks the people looting the stores are most likely voting for Joe Biden. But Dave, before you go, I want to read you this one text we just got in. This person says, I will not be watching any sports, including football. I watch sports to ignore politics, not to have it shoved in my face.
Right. But that's what they're doing. They are shoving these things in our face. And they're even getting it into our children, too, because, for example, my kids play a lot of video games and sports video games made by, like, EA Sports and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And the Black Lives Matter stuff is even on these video games. My kids show it to me that, oh, look, we just won a Black Lives Matter T-shirt. And there's Black Lives Matter signs all over the stadiums, even inside the video games that they're playing.
So they can't brainwash your kids at school anymore, so they're trying to brainwash them when they're at home playing video games. It's crazy. Dave Seminara, thank you so much for being with us. We'll have you back on the show soon. We love the piece. Tell everybody where they can find your stuff.
On my website, daveseminara.com, and I've got a book coming out about Roger Federer early next year, too, so if you're a tennis fan, watch out for that.
Awesome. Thanks, Dave. Guys, we'll be back with more news. We want to hear from you, 844-500-4242. I've got tons of stuff to cover when we get back, including more stuff about the Atlantic story, but that's not all. We have stories about some gyms in San Francisco. We have stories about the suburbs. We have new polls out that actually might make you happy. It's a change of pace. So do not leave. Do not change that dial. We will be back. I'm Grace Curley, filling in for Howie Carr. This is the Howie Carr Show.
You're tuned into the Howie Carr Radio Network.
This is Jeff in Woodstock, Connecticut.
This is Laura Benner in South Burlington, Vermont.
This is Jimmy Mack in Falmouth, Massachusetts. And this is the Howie Carr Show.
This is the Howie Carr Show, but this is Grace Curley. I'm here. It's Labor Day. We're doing a live show because, like Taylor said, there's no better way to honor this holiday than by working. And we're happy to be here providing you guys with some fresh, new content. And something I want to get to, Taylor, because sometimes when I fill in for Howie, I think I'm going to have all this time. And then it slips by. And I think, I didn't play that one cut that I really wanted to play. I'm not going to let that happen today. That one cut that I really want to play is Trump taking a question, from a reporter and asking the reporter to take off his mask so his voice wouldn't be muffled. And what ended up happening was the reporter obviously refused. He can't give in to Orange Man bad request. So let's have cut 19.
Thank you, Mr. President. The issue of what happened when you were in France continues to be a story.
You're going to have to take that off, please. Just, you can take it off. How many feet are you away?
I'll speak a lot louder.
Well, if you don't take it off, you're very muffled. So if you would take it off, it would be a lot easier.
I'll just speak a lot louder. Is that better?
It's better, yeah. It's better.
Mr. President.
Oh, gosh. And this actually reminds me of a cut that we're going to get to in the next hour of Rick Grenell. If you did not see Rick Grenell over the weekend, just destroying the media, all of these mask virtue signaling hacks. It is a beautiful cut that I cannot wait to play.
The killer part of that cut we just played is that when Trump initially asked him to take the mask off, the reporter went to take his mask off, but then was like, time to shine. Stand up for all your maskers out there.
And then a hero comes along. That's what happens every single time. They think, maybe I'll start trending on Twitter if I have a scuffle, if I have a little fight, a little tiff with the president. And that's what ends up happening. And I don't blame him for being tired of it because, like he pointed out over the weekend, they're so different when they go to Joe Biden press conferences. They take the mask off. They stand in their little circle with their microphone.
Especially weird since, as far as we know, everybody that goes onto the White House grounds these days is tested for COVID-19. And you're not allowed entrance if you're testing positive.
It's almost like they're doing this all for show. All right, guys, we got way more show to get to, including Joe DiGenova at 4:30. Do not miss it. I'm Grace. Taylor's on the board. We're filling in for Howie. This is the Howie Carr Show.